Good morning. It is 7 minutes past 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, here today filling in for Joy Cardine. Trends come and go in entertainment, and right now, fantasy is pretty hot. If you're looking to sell a lot of books or movies, try telling a good zombie story. Chances are, you could do pretty well. In fact, there is a trend in fantasy writing to the point where some established literary writers are trying their hand at it and succeeding. So the question is, why fantasy and why now? We'll be talking about the popularity of fantasy literature, video, and movies this hour with Michael Levy. He is a professor of English at the University of Wisconsin-Stout, and we'd like to hear from you, too. Are you a fan of fantasy? What is your favorite book, movie, or TV show in this category? What's your favorite character? Or maybe you just don't see what all of the fuss is about. Give us a call with your recommendations or your critiques at 800-642-1234. That is 800-642-1234. You can also get in touch with us at email. That address is talk@wpr.org. And you can follow Joy Cardine's program on Twitter and Facebook, too. Let's go to our guest right now, Michael Levy. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to have you along. And I want to start out with kind of a definition of what it is we're talking about, because I use that sort of broad term of fantasy. And can you help narrow that focus for us a little bit? When we're talking about fantasy in terms of literature, whether we're talking about it in terms of video, movies, and so forth, what are we talking about?
Well, the word can mean many different things. If you're a book publisher, it's a very narrow definition. It's a category in publishing, and you're mostly talking about wizards and you know, monsters and magicians and that kind of thing. More broadly in a literary sense, fantasy could be opposed to, say, mimetic literature, realistic literature. And it can include a wide range of things from Shakespeare to James Joyce in some cases. Some people would argue that in some sense all fiction is fantasy.
Well, there is that, isn't it? Because it's all fiction, right?
Well, all literature, not only is it fictional, but it's attempting to make sense in a world that doesn't really exist. You know, things happen in a way that moves on to a, you know, good triumphs. The world makes sense. And in a sense, this is all a fantasy that we need.
Right now, a lot of the fantasy, at least in terms of popular culture that I see, does tend towards the dark. I mean, lots of zombies, lots of vampires. Mm-hmm. And is there speculation as to why that might be at this particular moment in time? Or is it just, you know, a trend, a pendulum that swings back and forth?
Well, there's always dark fantasy. It's always popular. Whether there's a reason now, you know, because of the bad economy, people's fears about what's going on in the world, I'm not sure. It could just be the fact that, you know, Twilight hit it very big. You know, The Lord of the Rings had darkness in it all along, and so did the Harry Potter books. I think a lot of fantasy simply has that dark side to it, and always has.
And that dark side, you mentioned earlier that part of, you know, literature, part of fiction, part of fantasy is to try to make sense of all this. What is it about fantasy, do you think, that allows people to try to start trying to make sense of things that they might not know about or they might fear or just questions that they have?
Well, there are things you can do in fantasy. You can see the world in black and white. One of the criticisms that's made of, say, The Lord of the Rings, which is in many ways a magnificent work of literature, is that it does see the world basically in black and white terms. But that makes it easier to make sense of things, particularly if you're a veteran of the war and you're trying to see this great sweep of European history, which on one level is what Tolkien was doing. That I think is a central reason.
Does it give you license too, as a creator, to take more liberties in some ways? I mean, if you're writing regular fiction, you might be limited to, you know, characters in real life. But it seems to me as though fantasy opens up a whole bunch of new metaphors and new places to go that might not be available in real life.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing you have to realize is, you know, when you're asking why do people do fantasy, what is fantasy for, the answer is the exact same stuff. It's for the exact same things as other literature, okay? The exact same things. It's just that you know, different fantasies provide different things. Yeah, fantasy allows you to see metaphorically, to talk metaphorically about a lot of the great things in the world. By putting it in another world, it steps us back one level so we can see these things perhaps with them being a little less scary, because they're not right in our faces, as it were, in our world. But yeah, it can cover a lot. It can serve a lot of different purposes. It can do, again, everything that mimetic or realistic literature can do.
And the way you're phrasing it there, it sounds pretty lofty, but there are probably some listeners out there who would just dismiss fantasy sort of out of hand as being escapist or nerdy or just something for the kids. But you're making a pretty persuasive case for fantasy that it's more than all that.
Well, it is that, and it's more than that. You know, escapist, sure, some fantasy is escapist. But then, you know, so is an awful lot of the books on the bestseller list, so are. Some of it is nerdy. Yeah, there is some fantasy that's really going to only appeal to aficionados, kids who run around wearing, capes and carrying swords. And there's some that is just for children, although I don't see that as necessarily being an indicator of less quality. Some of the greatest literature in the world is children's literature. Other fantasy has a very serious purpose. Its purpose is to look at contemporary politics or to look at such important topics as good and evil, free will. There's just an enormously wide range of purposes to fantasy literature.
And where we're at right now with all the material that is out there, whether you're talking about books or movies or so forth, and we're having this discussion right now, as a whole, do you think that's good for the genre? Do you think that's healthy for fantasy, for people to be taking a close look at it like this?
Yeah, I think so. Fantasy literature can hold up for itself. I mean, it can stand up for itself. When you get a critic writing in a highbrow magazine who starts out with the basic premise that fantasy is trash, you're not going to get anything sensible out of him or her. But anyone who looks at it seriously and looks at the wide range, again, is going to find very impressive literary work and also other things that aren't, just like they would looking at any other kind of literature.
800-642-1234. We are talking about fantasy this hour. Fantasy literature, fantasy in movies, fantasy in video, fantasy all over the place. Michael Levy is with us. He is a professor in the English department at University of Wisconsin-Stout. And we are talking about that world of fantasy right now, that place where people are liking to go to either escape or to learn something. We'd like to hear from you if you'd like to join in, 800-642-1234. Michael Levy, you mentioned The Lord of the Rings earlier, and of course that trilogy, the Harry Potter series, are two of the, when people think of fantasy and you don't know much about it, those are kind of the first two that leap to mind. Mm-hmm. And those two were also ones that really made that leap from books into movies and did so pretty successfully. What is it about those particular stories that made them, gave them the ability to translate so well?
Well, you know, people of my generation, I'm 61, The Lord of the Rings was the great entry text to fantasy literature. You know, there was stuff before it, there was Edgar Rice Burroughs, there was comic books, but The Lord of the Rings is what we grew up with. So you've got, you know, decades and decades of people who have read the book. It wasn't just a bestseller for 6 months and gone. It was a low-level bestseller for many decades. So when the movies were made, you've got this enormous built-in audience who would still want to see them. The Harry Potter books are what are called entry-level texts for middle-grade kids. The Harry Potter books are very easy to understand. They're a lot of fun. They don't require you to be a experienced reader in the genre. So because they're pretty good stories and lots of fun, they took off like wildfire. And again, you've got this built-in audience over, I don't know how many years it's been since the first book was published, of kids and adults who wanted to see the movie because they enjoyed the books.
And in both cases, I have to say, fans of the books who took the movies very seriously. I mean, if you were looking for criticism of those movies and praise, I mean, it did work both ways, but certainly healthy debate. You didn't have to look very far when you saw those books translate from the printed page to the big screen.
Oh, sure. You know, there are always fans who want it to be exactly the way the experience was. We've all had the experience of seeing a movie and saying, oh, God, that's not as good as the book. And, of course, books and movies can never, well, almost never be translated perfectly from one genre to the other because they have very different requirements. So if you don't want a seven-hour movie and you leave out two or three major sections of The Lord of the Rings to get the movie down to 4 hours, you're just making the best movie you can. Whereas the fanatic, and always remember, fan is short for fanatic, would say, I just as soon have 7 hours and leave Tom Bombadil in the movie.
Yep, there you go. We're going to be talking more about fantasy with our guest this hour. Michael Levy is with us, a professor of English at UW-Stout. And we'll be taking your calls as well. If you've got a favorite author, a favorite character, or just some thoughts on why fantasy is so popular at this particular moment in time, 800-642-1234. Taking a look at Wisconsin weather for today, a dense fog advisory remains in effect for northwestern Wisconsin. That's until 10 this morning. Otherwise, it's going to be partly to mostly cloudy around the state with a chance of afternoon rain in the south. Expect highs in the low 70s to the low 80s. Tonight, increasing clouds with a chance of showers and thunderstorms again. That'll be covering most of the state. Lows dropping down into the low 50s to the low 60s. And then tomorrow, it is going to be cloudy. Showers and thunderstorms are likely throughout the day. Highs will be in the low 70s to right around 80. Around the state right now, it's 61 in Green Bay. Superior reports some fog and 52 degrees. It's 61 in Wausau, 62 in Oshkosh. It is clear and 60 in Eau Claire. Clear and 65 in La Crosse. Madison has 64 degrees. And in Milwaukee, it is 57. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 21 minutes past 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on the Ideas Network after 9 with Veronica Rickert, what makes something funny? After 9, Veronica and her guests explore the science of humor and what actually makes jokes work. That's coming up after 9. This hour, we are talking about fantasy. Fantasy in literature, fantasy in TV, in movies. Michael Levy is with us. He is a professor in the English department at the University of Wisconsin-Stout. And we're talking about the books, the movies that play such a large part in many of our lives these days. And we'd like to hear from you as well. If you're a fantasy fan, tell us what your favorite book, your favorite movie, or your favorite TV show might be in this category. 800-642-1234. Let's start out with the phones today. Roberta is with us from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. Great subject. I love it.
Okay.
I'm actually not a big reader of fantasy, but I'm I try and as best I can live in fantasy. And my comment is really simply to say that fantasy is actually closer to reality than reality is as we see it in this culture. You know, I'm always amazed at how other cultures engage in fantasy in a much more ongoing ritualistic way whether it's through dance or all kinds of ways of performance and Mardi Gras and carnivals and the whole thing that people just take to the streets and dress up and become something other than they are in everyday reality. And that ability to do that, that freedom, is what I believe fantasy is really, why it's so popular, why it's so engaging, why people want to go there. Because we're not living it enough in everyday life.
Well, Roberta, thanks for the call. Michael Levy, it was interesting. Roberta brings up the point that other cultures celebrate fantasy in different ways. Is this what we're talking about this hour? Is this particularly American?
Well, fantasy literature is not. You have fantasy in every culture. But, you know, she's got a point. Aristotle once said that poetry is more real than history. by which he meant that fiction is more real than fact, in that we can, in literature, and particularly in fantasy, we can make the world work the way we'd like it to. We can make sense of it. And that's very, very consoling in many ways. There's a lot of consolation, a lot of ways of making yourself feel a good about life in fantasy literature. And it also translates, I think, and, you know, she was talking about Mardi Gras. You know, there's this big thing now called cosplay, which came out of Japan. People walking around in everyday life dressed as their favorite fantasy characters. So, yeah, I think that to some extent fantasy's purpose is to allow us to have a richer life that way.
800-642-1234. Steve joins us now from Madison. Hi.
Good morning. I was calling to say that I've been a big fantasy reader for decades. I'm 63 now, and so I'm one of those who picked up The Lord of the Rings in the 60s and really enjoyed it. The comment I have, though, is that Tolkien is such a huge figure in fantasy literature that it seems like 99% of what's out there now as fantasy is really a Tolkien rehashed, even to the point where now you can't really, it's difficult to find anything in fantasy that's not a trilogy. It's difficult to find a single work. And so I find myself going back and reading fantasy that was written before Tolkien and enjoying it just because it's different from what's out there now.
What are some examples of that you could pass along, Steve?
Oh, well, I just finished reading the Narnia Chronicles again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Robert Silverberg's, of course, he's after Tolkien. That's all I can think of right offhand.
Sure. Well, we hate to put you on the spot on the air, but thanks for the call. I'll put Michael Levy on the spot right now and ask him about that influence. You know, when there's something that's so successful, that influence really does spread out. And your thoughts on Steve's comments?
Yeah, well, Steve is mostly right. You know, whenever something gigantic comes around, everything moves to it. It's a magnet. Tolkien did change the entire world of fantasy literature, and to this day, the biggest sellers like Robert Jordan, Terry Goodkind, are people who are writing directly out of the Tolkien way of writing fantasy. Some of them better than others. George R. R. Martin, I would say, is actually writing in some ways better fantasy than Tolkien, but in the Tolkienian style. The same thing happened with Harry Potter. We were inundated with stories about smart kids going to magic schools. And, of course, ever since Twilight came out, we've had this enormous rush of sparkly vampires. And that does happen. But there are always other kinds of literature, other kinds of fantasy. If you don't like Tolkienian-style fantasy, there are some great modern writers. You can read Philip Pullman. You can read China Mieville. You can read Suzanne Clark, Michael Swanwick, Holly Black. There are many other very fine fantasy writers who are doing their own thing. And, yeah, you know, were they influenced by Tolkien? Well, you know, of course, everyone is. Just like every scientist in physics today was influenced by Einstein. But they're doing their own things, and they're quite different.
Let's go back to the phones. Barbara joins us from Madison. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. This is a fabulous conversation for early in the morning. I'm a huge fantasy fan, and one of the reasons why I really love fantasy is because it's deep. It's deeper. It can take your thoughts in places where you'd never think that you would go. One of my favorite books, and I can't remember the author's name, is called Native Tongue. And it starts with an act of Congress rescinding all of women's rights.
Suzette Hayden Ogden.
Yes. And so I really think that it causes you to think more about things in reality. You know, fantasy and reality seem like they're opposite ends of the pole. But I don't know that that's actually true. I think that I've been waiting years for George R. R. Martin to finish the Game of Thrones series, and now we know what he was doing, making the screenplay for HBO.
Well, Barbara, thanks for the call. Michael Levy, a couple of other suggestions there. We heard Game of Thrones, Native Tongue. And, you know, it's interesting, as everybody calls in this morning, it's like any other literature, any other media, really. You bring your own personal experience, your own take to it.
That's true. It all depends on what your taste is, what your philosophic background is, what your religious background is. Fantasy literature can be intensely political. You've got people who are extremely conservative politically and religiously, like Orson Scott Card writing serious fantasy. You have people like China Mieville writing Marxist fantasy. So, yeah, there's an enormous spectrum, and again, many, many different purposes served. And you can get very deep into philosophy, into personal thoughts, just into concepts like good and evil, free will. Writers deal with these things in fantasy with great seriousness.
Michael Levy is with us this hour. He is a professor in the English department at the University of Wisconsin-Stout. And we're talking about the world of fantasy this morning in terms of books, television, movies, and perhaps even a little bit in gaming, I suppose. 800-642-1234 is the number if you'd like to join in. We've got some calls lined up, but we do have to take a break for news. But do not worry, because we will return and we will continue our discussion on fantasy. And find out what you think about it. Maybe you don't like it. Let us know why or why not. 800-642-1234. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Came in 25 minutes before 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'm here this week filling in for Joy Cardine. We're talking about fantasy this hour. Whether we're talking about a good TV show about vampires, whether we're talking about wizards and warlocks, a lot of fantasy literature, a lot of movies, and we're talking about it all with Michael Levy this hour, a professor in the English department at UW-Stout. And we're taking your calls as well at 800-642-1234. What is the appeal of fantasy literature for you? And do you have any good recommendations for kids or for adults? 800-642-1234. Let's head back to the phones. Gregory is with us from Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning. My kind of radical thesis is that fantasy is the norm in literature. If you look at the whole of human history, and this reality stuff is a comparatively recent fad. I'm much of an age with the guest, and as both a reader of fantasy since I was a boy, and an English literature major in school, in college, I had the frustration of trying to convince some of the faculty that Lord of the Rings had value, which they insisted was junk. Unconscious of the irony that they were teaching Chaucer, who's full of beast fables and dream visions and fairy tales, or Shakespeare, who's got witches and magic and ghosts.
Well, let's put it to our guest, Michael Levy. How radical a notion does Gregory have?
Well, I don't think it's very radical at all. I mean, I think it's one that would make some of your more conservative modernist professors, people who grew up in that tradition, upset perhaps, but I think it's also largely true. Part of the problem, of course, is the question of in early literature, whether you're talking Greeks or the age of Shakespeare, to what extent did they believe the fantastic was real? To what extent did Shakespeare's audience believe that the witches in Macbeth might actually be true? If you believe it's real, then there's a slightly different, it's not exactly fantasy literature, even though from our modern perspective it is. But I tend to believe that, most of Shakespeare's audience really did know that this was fantasy and that they were enjoying what is in some sense a horror story. So, yeah, I would say that fantasy is to a great extent the great tradition rather than realism. So I don't think that he's all that wrong, but there has been, over the last 50 years, a great prejudice against fantasy in academia, at least in America, which is dying out to some extent, but still there.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on that a little bit because Gregory mentioned it and you have alluded to it throughout the hour. Why is that, do you suppose? Is it just the subject matter? From what you've been telling me, it doesn't sound like the writing quality is always that different, that sometimes the writing quality is right up there with the best.
Well, I think that there are a number of factors. You go back to Shakespeare's day, and the Puritans were always trying to close the theaters because they were immoral and ungodly. And there's always been a thread in human moral discussion arguing that anything that's fun is evil, anything that's not realistic is evil, anything that's, there was the belief that anything supernatural, anything that talked about the supernatural was ungodly. Many people have had historically trouble differentiating between the idea of literature talking about the supernatural and actually dealing with the supernatural. That's why the Harry Potter books have been so widely banned, and Philip Pullman books as well. So I think you've got that going, and I think you've just also got a powerful literary tradition that dates back to the late 19th century that argues for fantasy, again, as worthless because it's escapism, and we really need to have literature that puts our nose to the grindstone, and we can enjoy ourselves, but only if we're doing it within our real world and learning about what it's like to be an adult.
Let's go back to the phones right now. John joins us, and John is in Madison. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to mention an author named Philip K. Dick.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the book called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which the movie Blade Runner is based on. And that was always one of my favorite books that I read during high school. And he's also had quite a few movies out that are based on his books. Off the top of my head, Minority Report and A Scanner Darkly.
John, thanks for the call. And Michael Levy, Philip K. Dick, a name that comes up often. But a lot of people could confuse that with science fiction. Is there a difference in there?
Yeah, well, okay, different experts will say different things.
Uh-huh.
I tend to argue that science fiction is a type of fantasy, one where the marvelous is confined to either what is scientifically possible or what, within the context of the story, we're supposed to believe is scientifically possible. From a generic point of view, science fiction and fantasy and horror are often seen as the three poles. Can you have three poles? Three areas that are in opposition with each other. Dick wrote mostly science fiction, although some of his work moves into fantasy, some of it works into a kind of theological fantasy. Dick is one of the writers who has been brought into the canon. It's funny. He was a fairly dissolute, shoddy kind of writer. He wrote nothing but original paperbacks, which were considered the low end of the totem pole in publishing. And yet now there's a Library of America edition of his works. So he's been kind of canonized. He was a good writer.
And you mentioned the other thing that we haven't talked about too much, the other pole, I guess, horror.
Mm-hmm.
And, you start talking about vampires and werewolves and things of that nature, and the horror and the fantasy does start getting blurred a bit.
The thing is, the term horror is the one genre where the effect it has on the reader is how it's defined. Horror can be anything. Science fiction can be horror. Fantasy can be horror. Realism can be horror. If you think about zombies, you're moving a little bit more towards science fiction often because there's an attempt to make them scientifically possible. If you're talking about ghosts and werewolves, you're more into the fantasy realm. But you've also got things like The Silence of the Lambs, which has no supernatural content at all. That's often called psychological horror. Much fantasy, much science fiction partakes of horror to varying degrees.
Lots to think about. Let's think about more with a call from Tim, who joins us from Platteville. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to talk to a guest about how our society places restrictions assumptions on us based on the norm. But fantasy takes us to new worlds where those norms no longer exist. In books like Anne Bishop's Black Jewels trilogy or Jacqueline Terry's Parody Ange world, it's all unique worlds where we can experience new norms and new societal boundaries.
Tim, not the greatest phone line there, but I think our guest was able to get the gist of it.
Yeah, well, I've never read Anne Bishop. I know Jacqueline Carey, but I think what he's talking about is that fantasy allows us to explore different social norms. We can try things like, changing basic, our basic sense of right and wrong. The Carey books they're an odd set of books which involve a certain amount of, they use body modification and tattooing and a certain amount of torture, sadomasochism. And I'm not very fond of them myself, but they do explore a different way of looking at the world, a different lifestyle. And you can use fantasy to explore many different lifestyles, different marital relationships, different, you know, that kind of thing. So again, fantasy allows you to go in all sorts of directions that you might want to go.
You know, are there things out there right now that people that have become so mainstream but are really fantasy? And the one that leaps to my mind is Wizard of Oz.
Well, the Wizard of Oz is one of the great texts of literature. When the Oz books first came out, they were despised by librarians and generally by reviewers, but they were, you know, they made a lot of money for the author. They were enormously popular. They were the equivalent of the Twilight or the Harry Potter of their day. And, they were outsider texts. They were not seen as part of the canon in any way.
And how unusual is it that, in the case of The Wizard of Oz, that most people think the movie first, and they forget the popularity of the books that were, 40, 50 years earlier?
Well, the first...
Not quite that, but...
Not quite.
Yeah.
The first Oz books came out in the very early 1900s. Yeah, well, that movie was, you know, again, a game changer. There were several Oz movies prior to it. There was a successful stage play. There were, you know, and there were a dozen, 14 books before it came out, maybe more than that, if you count the ones written by other people. They were a best-selling phenomena before the movie. Then the movie came out, and the movie wasn't all that big of a success right away, but then it became a staple, you know, every year on TV. And that's what people remember. Yeah, it's always a little strange if you're a person of the book to realize that you're talking about a work of literature and people are talking about the film. I have that with my students all the time.
I'll bet. 800-642-1234. We're talking with Michael Levy this hour. He is a professor in the English department at the University of Wisconsin-Stout. And we're talking about the world of fantasy, whether it's in literature, whether it's in movies and film, whether it's in television, and the role it plays in your life. 800-642-1234. Taking a look at Wisconsin weather for today, a dense fog advisory for northwestern Wisconsin. That'll be in effect until 10 this morning. Otherwise, it's going to be partly to mostly cloudy. Expect a chance of rain this afternoon. That'll be in the southern part of the state. Highs will be in the low 70s into the low 80s. Tonight, increasing clouds with a chance of showers, possibly some thunderstorms across much of the state. Lows back down into the low 50s and low 60s. And then tomorrow, it is going to be cloudy. Showers and thunderstorms are likely. Highs from the low 70s to right around 80. Around Wisconsin right now in Green Bay, it is 62 degrees. Superior, it is 50 in Wausau. It is 62. Oshkosh, 63. It's 60 in Eau Claire. 67 now in La Crosse. 65 in Madison. And Milwaukee cooling off a bit. It's 55. I'm Gene Purcell. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
A wizard is never late, Frodo Baggins. Nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to.
Sound advice from the Lord of the Rings. Gene Purcell back with you, in for Joy Cardine this week, and we are talking about fantasy this hour. Michael Levy is our guest, a professor of the English department at UW-Stout, and we're going to go back to the phones and find out what's happening. Ray joins us now from, looks like, Lake Villa, Illinois. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you guys today?
Good, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Good. Glad to hear that. You know, I was thinking about the extensive conversation that fantasy has when you read it with yourself, how it offers, in some ways, moral guidance, and whether it's the simple mundane of being on time, as you just did with the clip from Gandalf,
yeah.
Or the deeper questions of good and evil struggling against each other. And I was thinking about the relationship between that and religion and how religion does that. And I'm just curious about the guests' views on or comments on the moral guidance and the struggles between good and evil that take place in fantasy and in religion. And I'll just hang up and take my comments off the air.
Well, thanks for the call, Ray. Michael Levy.
Yeah, that's an important and somewhat controversial issue. I think a lot of fantasy literature is intensely concerned with the problem of good and evil. I think that's one of the main avenues that writers who want to write about that take, because you can put the question in novel ways. You can simplify it, as Tolkien did in The Lord of the Rings, which is a very deep discussion of good and evil, which he makes doable because, you know, you've got this absolute evil to struggle against. I think fantasy literature, to some extent, provides the same kind of guidance as religion. And I think that's part of the reason why some kinds of religious people are made very nervous by fantasy literature. The fantasy novels or movies that are most attacked by some kinds of Christians and Jews and Muslims tend to be books that deal with religious issues, like, again, Harry Potter or the Philip Pullman books or, other things as well.
Brian joins us now from Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning. I just had a few comments. One of the things you had mentioned earlier was kind of a trend of having dark elements in fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think kind of a reason for that might be because any good story has to have conflict in order to keep you interested. If it's just unicorns prancing in a field and everything's happy, you're not going to read very far.
Well, you never know.
Mm-hmm. And so fantasy kind of takes that and often kind of ups the stakes a lot. So there's really good and really evil. Bringing up Lord of the Rings again, I would say mostly it is kind of good versus evil, except for the character of Gollum, who is one of my favorites, because he's really kind of stuck in the middle between everything, caught up by the ring. And then my last comment is about one of the most recent theories kind of in quantum mechanics is the multiple worlds theory,
mm-hmm.
where basically there's all these different realities kind of side by side with ours. And so who's to say there's not, Middle Earth somewhere in a different kind of plane of existence? And some fantasy has even kind of dealt with that.
Well, Brian, thanks for the call. Michael Levy, a lot to chew on there.
Well, alternate universe literature is very hot right now. There's a lot of it. It's often done in a form that's more science fictional, but it can be done in a fantasy form. The multiple universe theory, that is a hot quantum mechanics theory. And it does allow you to explore, what would the United States be like if it was exactly like it is, except there was magic, how would it change things? And sure, a number of writers are exploring that. Harry Turtledove does that a lot. Holly Black is exploring it right now. What would gangsters be like if they could work magic? Kind of a fun idea to play with.
Indeed. Let's take a few more calls here before the top of the hour. Ellie is with us from La Crosse. Hi.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. I'm very confused by hearing in one ear and the radio from the other ear. It's not exactly synchronized. The author that I would like to mention is Mary Doria Russell.
Mm-hmm.
She has written two books, a story and its sequel, and I dearly wish that there was a trilogy, but there's not. These are, I think they have strands of almost everything that you've spoken about, the religious aspect and time travel and all kinds of things. And the books are they're so richly written, it's like the difference between looking at a flat print and looking at a tapestry. They're just absolutely marvelous. The first is called The Sparrow, and the second is called The Children of God.
All right, we'll get some comments from Michael Levy on that. Mary Doria Russell.
Yeah, well, she's an interesting writer. She hit science fiction hard. She was published as a mainstream writer. It was a classic case of she's too good to be science fiction, so we'll publish her as a mainstream novelist, even though her first novel was about a interstellar exploratory flight to another planet with aliens. But she did explore a lot of important ideas. Your main character is a Catholic priest who basically loses his faith after he is... Well, I don't want to go into some of the darker details in the book, but yeah, they're very fine novels. They deal with all sorts of important ideas. But Russell, after she wrote those two books, which won all sorts of awards, started writing realistic and historical fiction. And she's written several fine novels since then, but they haven't gotten any sort of press like The Sparrow did.
Wow. Mark is with us now from Richland Center.
Yes, what about the commentary for political... reasons that certain genres are used because maybe they don't think that they could speak out on issues that they might otherwise. The mention was made of The Wizard of Oz. That was actually a commentary on our monetary system, and then recent movies, The Matrix and V for Vendetta, are really speaking about government overshooting its control and governmental issues, and it seems to me that a lot of political commentary is made with this genre.
Oh, sure, yeah, a lot of it's an easy way to do it, and that's been done since the Renaissance, the 17th century in England. You could get your head cut off if you insulted the king. So you set a criticism of the king in Fairyland, and Oberon, you talk about Oberon, the king of the fairies, and you're really talking about Charles II or Charles I, but yeah, that's been done for centuries. Contemporary science fiction writers do it all the time. You mentioned a couple. V for Vendetta is a very political story. China Mieville, who's one of the best of the newer crop of fantasy writers, is a Marxist who is always talking about very serious issues in even his most Baroque fiction. Yeah, it goes on and on. You've got conservative writers who are making appeals for the so-called traditional American values within the context of fantasy text too. And it becomes allegory of a sort for the right way, the way the world should be, you know, if I ran the world.
And we've only got about 30 seconds left, but we've been talking a lot about vampires and that sort of thing. Any new trends in fantasy coming up in the next year or two that we should be alert to?
Oh, it's hard to tell a trend beforehand.
There is that.
You know, zombies have become enormously big, and someone told me they thought werewolves were the next big thing. I don't know. I think you're just going to continue to see, with the success of the Game of Thrones on TV, I think you're going to see more serious fantasy. The Game of Thrones is showing that you can write, you know, serious literature and turn it into TV and have it sell. So I'm looking forward to it. I think we're going to see a lot of really good stuff in the next few years.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Levy has been with us, a professor in the English department at UW-Stout. We've been talking about the world of fantasy in terms of movies, television, and, of course, literature. The program was produced by Rob Ferret. We had on-air production from Chris Molina and on-air help from Bill Martins as well. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.